right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. I am your co-host, dutifully and cheerfully. You guys know me, Bryce Paul. You guys also know my notorious co-host, Brendan Veman. Brendan, how are you doing today, man?
I am doing good. What's up, everybody? You know, we're seeing a lot of life in the crypto markets right now, Bryce. I don't know about you, but I am riled up and I am excited.
I'm making it all back in one trade. I've been
in a long time because it's October and we're feeling the effects of it. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, it's crazy because everybody was talking about October. You know, it's always on record as one of the best months in crypto's market. And then we just were dragging and dragging for the first, 2 weeks? Finally, over this past weekend, we just saw a tremendous bid in the market. And we're excited. Clearly, it's a builder's market still. And that's why we have a builder with us today who we're going to introduce. But maybe the speculation will return here to the market as the bull unfolds. But we're all always excited through the bear and through the bull. And we don't like to call it bear markets. We like to call them builder's markets because this is when the actual real stuff gets done. This is when nobody's really paying attention and everybody's stopped calling you and texting you to hear about the latest price of Bitcoin. But the real, you know, crypto aficionados and the real builders stick around and they build what ends up being the infrastructure for the future. So we have joining us a very special guest, Matt Bell, who is the CEO of TurboFish. So Matt, welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey guys, TiVo here to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock, a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell all in one. That's right, 3-in-1 for triple the security. It's easy to install. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. It gives you keyless entry, so no more fumbling your keys when you have your hands full coming back from the grocery store. No more worry about the kids losing a house key. No more worry about a guest losing the house key or forgetting the passcode on your door. And for Airbnbers, it's a no-brainer as you can change the passcode at will between renters. It has available fingerprint recognition, and it has AI self-learning chip, so the more you use it, the more accurate it's going to be. You will have no anxiety with the battery charging. It is a rechargeable battery, and it lasts around 4 months, but don't worry, when it's low, it'll give you plenty of weeks' notice, and also, it always comes with a physical key as a backup. There's no monthly fee. Unlike other brands that charge you a monthly fee to get your backup recordings, they're always recorded locally and you will always have access. Customer support for the Eufy Video Lock is 24/7, so you don't have to worry about any issues you have, and it comes with an 18-month warranty. What I love about this product is it's truly all-in-one with a 3-in-1. You don't have to go out and buy multiple parts. It's all in this package with the Eufy Video Lock. So if you're interested in learning more, go on Amazon and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock. Again, that's EUFY Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock. Get complete control over your front door.
Yeah, we're really excited. How do you feel? Are you feeling excited, or are you just, you know, you don't even check price charts? What do you think?
I check a little bit. Yeah, I mean, yeah, we've been in the builder's market. I've just been building and not checking. But then now, you know, it feels good when you have a chance to like, okay, now I want to check it because I'm going to look and see a bunch of green on CoinMarketCap and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. Just like, yeah, Bitcoin right now, it's up 5% in the last 24 hours. That's pretty good. Like, that feels good.
I mean, you make a good point because there are times in the market where we are checking our phone. I find myself opening up the TradingView app just to close it and then open it back up and then close it and then open it back
right
up. Like it's a social media like page.
You're an addict.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the same hit of dopamine as social media. It's just like you refresh. You're like, oh, my bags went up a little bit. So that's good.
And then there's other times where I'm like, I do not want to look at the market. I am deleting my TradingView app and yep, I'll look at it next month. And, you know, luckily we're on the first scenario where now I'm constantly refreshing my feed and I'm just excited to be a part of it.
Just happy to be here, right? Yeah. Well, Matt, let's dive into a little bit about your background prior to, you know, founding TurboFish, and we'll get into that and all the amazing things you're building there. But what were you kind of doing before, and how did you find your way into the blockchain and the crypto markets?
Yeah, so it's been a long time now. Like, I got into the industry just sort of on accident. Like, I was just interested in Bitcoin in, like, 2012, just learning about it and, like, wow, this is a really cool thing. And back then, it was such a small world, like, you know, like a subreddit with, like, you know, a few thousand people, basically. And it was
just, like,
a small community and just, like, in... Yeah, Bitcoin was like $1 back then or something, just like in all these different chat rooms talking about this stuff. And I never really thought like, oh, this is going to be something that like I should invest in that's going to grow a lot. It was just for me, it was like, this is some cool, fun, little like niche technology, you know, and it's interesting to me. So I was interested in it. Then I just sort of, you know, there were some companies in the space that had raised money and stuff. So I like started working in that world, you know, and then it's just sort of stuck, and now it's been a decade of working in the industry and at, you know, all these different projects and seeing it evolve, and it's gone way farther than I ever thought it could.
It's exciting. And kind of, you know, what made you decide of all the companies you could found and work on, you know, what was it about TurboFish that really made you land on that?
Yeah, so at TurboFish, we're just focused on, you know, we've seen the trends come and go in like, you know, how things are built, the different engineering, the different platforms people have built on. And we think we have, you know, a special take on how to build things the right way, sort of how to get the core engineering really right, to build everything how it will, you know, how it will last. Like, all the, if you think of all the crypto and blockchain products people will use in the future, you know, that'll support billions of users, we just really want to build that rather than, you know, there's been so many platforms that are just sort of like the transitions to get us there, but we really want to build the future of this technology.
And what is it that you're building at TurboFish specifically?
Yeah, so our focus right now is we're founding a protocol called Gnomic, and Gnomic basically brings Bitcoin to Cosmos and, you know, and beyond. And it's just sort of, you know, if you look at Bitcoin, it's been the strongest crypto asset all this time. You know, it's the first one, but it's always been the biggest. Even right now, it's mm-hmm. bigger than all other crypto combined, which is pretty amazing.
It is crazy.
But if you think about it, everyone, like so many people own Bitcoin, but it's just sitting there in their wallets, not doing anything. But in recent years, people have built all these cool newer platforms that have, you know, DeFi and all these cool new things you can do. And, you know, but the liquidity and the value of Bitcoin has sort of just been separate from that. So the goal we're trying to achieve in building Gnomic is bringing Bitcoin into the DeFi world. And yeah, we're starting with Cosmos for that. So you'll be able to move Bitcoin through Gnomic into any Cosmos chain really easily. Like, you'll be able to just go to Osmosis, for instance, and like click a button, like you just click deposit, you get a Bitcoin address, you send to that, and then it's in, you know, your Bitcoin is in Osmosis. So, yeah.
So this is really all about empowering these everyday users. I mean, like you said, Bitcoin's the largest cryptocurrency. It's probably the most held cryptocurrency as well because of that reason. And so, you know, this gets me thinking, if people have more of a reason to transact Bitcoin and move it around and be active, this would probably increase not only volume, but liquidity as well. Is that right?
Definitely, yeah. So there's like, you know, if you think of liquidity as just like moving capital into some system or some market, you know, if it's just, if the Bitcoin, you know, it already has so much value, but it's not doing anything, why not move it into DeFi, earn a little bit of yield or whatever mm-hmm. you want to do with it? So yeah, it seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, just if you go back and you look at the Ethereum 2.0 launch, people were really excited about just the concept of being able to stake and unstake Ethereum. I mean, it brought a ton of additional volume and activity and all sorts of things. So if we kind of open those flood doors to something that is as large as Bitcoin, it, you know, I guess we'll let the mind, the curiosity expand there, but it has a lot of opportunity.
Yeah.
But is this something that's different than like wrapped Bitcoin? I know, you know, people have been using WBTC on Ethereum for quite some time. You know, is how different or how similar is it to that model?
Yeah, that's a good question. So with Nomic, you have NBTC, and the comparison with WBTC is, like, we really want it to be used everywhere WBTC is used today, but WBTC, it's held custodially. Like, there's just one company called BitGo that's holding the Bitcoin. So if you hold WBTC, it's sort of just an IOU from them. You don't actually have Bitcoin. So it does give you price exposure to Bitcoin. Like, if you're like, oh, the price of Bitcoin's going up, I want to hold this. Holding WBTC does solve that problem, but you now have this underlying risk of this one central institution that you just sort of have to trust that they, you know, really are going to hold that, and that it's not going to be like an FTX sort of situation or something like that.
Oh boy.
And right. And
anytime there's trust, also, it seems like it ends poorly.
Right. That's like the whole point of crypto. Like, that's like the first sentence in the Bitcoin white paper is like, we can build a system with no trusted intermediaries. You know, that's sort of the point. But like, just because Bitcoin, it, like, just so far nobody has built that, then people are just trusting BitGo to hold Bitcoin for WBTC. But then the other part, it's not just the risk and the trust, but WBTC, it's not a permissionless network. So you have to be a merchant that's like signed up with them. Like, there's just a list of companies that are partnered with them, and those are the people who can move Bitcoin in and out of WBTC, as opposed to Nomic. You can just, you have Bitcoin in your wallet, you just send it in, now it's NBTC. Or you could go the other way around. If you have NBTC, you just withdraw, now it's back in your Bitcoin wallet.
You know, do you think that a Bitcoin-centric Cosmos could eventually rival Ethereum?
Yeah, I think that can make a lot of sense. I think there's a lot of people in Cosmos that are really excited about Bitcoin. And like, I know Ethan Buckman, one of the founders of Cosmos, he said at points that everyone in Cosmos is just a closet Bitcoin maximalist. And I think that might be kind of true. There's like a lot of people that are just sort of like, you know, I think a lot of us, I was an early employee at Cosmos too, by the way. So like, this is an ecosystem that I've just, both me and my co-founder, Judd Keppel, I think, you know, this is just an ecosystem that is very near and dear to us. We know a lot of the people, and there's just sort of a lot of people got into crypto early on because of Bitcoin. And so we're all just builders, you know, building our own new cool things. But I think so many people in Cosmos like would love to see Cosmos flourish around Bitcoin. And I really do think it could do that.
Yeah. And since we have kind of a Cosmos you know, expert here on the show, we would actually love just a little bit of background on Cosmos. I think people, if you haven't heard of Cosmos, maybe you've seen the ticker ATOM. That's the Atom token, which is associated with the network. You know, what is it and why has it become, you know, top 100 here on the crypto coin market cap?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, so the interesting part of Cosmos is it's different than if you look at any of the other like L1 projects in crypto. So there's obviously Ethereum, there's, you know, Solana, there's, you know, all those sort of comparable platforms like that. Those are all monolithic blockchains. Like, it's one big blockchain where people who want to build on top, they're now like, you know, submitting their smart contract, and it's sort of, they don't really get to decide how it runs. They're sort of just putting their piece on top of someone else's big platform, as opposed to Cosmos. Cosmos is really just essentially a toolkit that lets projects build their own chain instead, but also with a protocol to let all the chains talk to each other. So there's a lot more sovereignty where a project can sort of build however they want it to be, and then they still get the ecosystem because you can move tokens onto any other chain and interact with all these other projects. So that's sort of the fundamental difference. That's sort of the Cosmos vision, is to have every blockchain talk to every other blockchain, as opposed to all these different siloed ecosystems. And so, there's the Atom token in Cosmos, but really, since it's many separate individual projects, not everything necessarily uses that in Cosmos. It's not like Ethereum, where every transaction in Ethereum, you're going to have to pay ETH as the fee. Well, in Cosmos, you might be on some completely separate chain that just has nothing to do with Atom, has nothing, you know, it might just have its own token, and that's pretty common. So it's just sort of a different model, and it's proven to have, you know, really good tech. And it's, the cool part is all these projects can really build themselves how they want to. And so there's the Cosmos SDK, which is this toolkit for developers to build a chain using these tools. But we at Turbofish, we've built our own separate stack to build everything from the ground up with like a completely different code base. And it still works with all these other Cosmos chains, which is really cool. So ours is called Orga, and it's built in Rust, and we've made it like really fast, can process tons of transactions per second. And it's also even really easy to use as developers, where you can write really cool things in a very small amount of code. So we're really excited about the tools we've built, and that's what Gnomic is built on top of.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And if we kind of take a look and we zoom out, you know, Cosmos is handling a very interesting issue, which is that all of these different blockchains, like you mentioned, are all siloed, right? That, you know, blockchain on, Bitcoin can't talk to Ethereum without kind of some custodial bridge. Polkadot can't talk to Cosmos, et cetera. And so, you know, if we kind of take a look at, you know, the reason that Bitcoin is not used very widely in DeFi, do you think it's that very nature? Like, you know, the fact that if you already use Bitcoin right now in DeFi, there needs to be some element of trust, because for some reason there is no DeFi sort of applications that are really active on the Bitcoin network.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, doing it with trust is just sort of like the shortcut, like easy stopgap that has happened so far. But this is really what Gnomic is trying to achieve, is solving that exact problem right there and moving Bitcoin to everywhere in DeFi, including Ethereum and everywhere else you might want to use it, with very minimal trust, you know. And so I really do think it's possible. Bitcoin is obviously harder to work with. It's not like you just deploy some smart contracts and it goes. You sort of have to really know the ins and outs of the protocol, but Gnomic really does use every available feature of Bitcoin. It's really tightly integrated with how Bitcoin works, and it really does solve that problem, let you move Bitcoin anywhere, starting with, as of the interchain upgrade that Gnomic will be deploying in a week. So on October 30th, it will be everywhere in Cosmos. You'll be able to move Bitcoin anywhere in Cosmos.
And how would that work? Kind of walk us through that.
Yeah. So from the user's perspective, it's really easy. It's really simple. It's like you're just on Osmosis, you hit deposit, you see a Bitcoin address and you send to it, and then it shows up in your Osmosis account as NBTC. And behind the scenes, like under the hood, what's happening is that Bitcoin address really represents this special script on Bitcoin that secures the funds by Gnomic and automatically forwards it over IBC, which is the Cosmos protocol that lets any chain talk to any other chain. It's inter-blockchain communication. So you send that Bitcoin address, it's in the bridge, and then it forwards the Bitcoin over IBC to the chain where you wanted it to go. But from the user's perspective, it's not like you really even have to know about what's happening. It's like sort of invisible. It's sort of just, you know, you send Bitcoin to an address and that's it. It's one step.
So I'm curious, you know, let's say we're looking at the long picture. You fulfill your goal of NBTC. What's next for you? Do you move on to another cryptocurrency? I guess, is there anything that comes to your mind, or are you just really focused on NBTC right now?
Yeah, there's tons of things that come to mind. So we're, you know, like having worked in this industry for so long, I feel like, you know, there's so many things that I wish to happen that I think, you know, just over the years will happen. But in the medium term, like after NBTC is perfected, I picture like building a lot of sort of Bitcoin native DeFi of, you know, instead of just moving your Bitcoin to Ethereum and using it in DeFi there, having sort of going the other way and bringing the DeFi to Bitcoin rather than bringing Bitcoin to DeFi, and building, you know, cool financial primitives that really are tightly integrated with Bitcoin. And so, for instance, just being able to like self-custody your Bitcoin, but like borrow dollars against it and get, you know, a dollar stable coin that's backed by Bitcoin, or, you know, things of that nature. So,
yeah, I mean, definitely. And this is, I find this as a super interesting project because it's addressing there's a lot of projects out there where we just have 10 projects doing the same thing. But this isn't one of those instances. Like, you're doing a very niche thing, but it makes sense as you're walking us through it. But I guess I'm kind of curious, as someone who's a little bit of a marketing background, like, how do you get the word out for something like this? Like, how do you look at promoting adoption for something that is, I guess, as niche as this?
So, I mean, it's just interesting that you say niche because, yeah, it's the Bitcoin niche, but Bitcoin, you know, it's a $600 billion asset. So if it's a niche, like if we're able to be successful in that niche, it is a large market. And I think there's very proven demand for DeFi and just finance for Bitcoin. Just looking at, you know, the Ethereum TVL, like the total value locked in Ethereum, there's $20 billion worth right now, but WBTC, it's $5 billion. And so you could say that's only a quarter, but if you look at it through the lens of, you know, that's a very non-native asset, and it's you're having to accept all this risk because there's a custodian, but that many people still want to use it, as opposed to ETH, which is like the native asset for the platform. I think if you could get Bitcoin as the native asset for a DeFi platform, then people really do want to use that. And then there's also all the centralized platforms people have used. There was like BlockFi and Celsius and all those things. And those held, you know, tens of billions of dollars in value themselves. But it just turned out, you know, since there were central custodians and all this risk, you know, they kind of fell apart. But it shows that people really do want to be earning yield with their Bitcoin or doing cool finance things with it. And I don't know. So I think that niche already is very large, and like there is demand for that. And right now it's just sort of unserved, where there's no product that really offers that right now, where you're not like taking on all this risk. And so I think getting the word out, you know, I think people are sort of already looking for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. When you talk to people, I mean, number one, who doesn't want to earn a yield, right? I've talked to even my parents, and I would say anyone that's even on like the older side, or anyone that's not even like, that doesn't live in crypto. Like, we all live in crypto. We're probably looking at the markets 12 hours a day, whether it's charts or news or developing or something like that. But for the average person, like a lot of people out there don't know that they can earn yield on their crypto. Even on things as simple as like Ethereum or Cosmos, they go, oh, you can earn a yield on that, you know, let alone Bitcoin. And you're right, like Bitcoin has this massive market cap, it has this massive audience base. And if you're going to tell those people, hey, you can earn a yield on your Bitcoin, you can use it for all these different purposes now, I think that kind of blow a lot of people's minds. And like, again, who wouldn't be interested in maybe getting a little bit more? Because what that does is that compounds over time, right? You know, maybe you'll get a couple percent on Bitcoin, but it's growing by X amount over the next, you know, 1, 5, 10 years. I think that is something that a lot of people are going to find interesting.
Yeah. And I guess kind of to follow up on that, what are some of the like yield generating applications that we can pledge our NBTC to? I know a lot of people who are listeners are probably familiar with you know, maybe Aave or Compound or MakerDAO or some of these, you know, very classic Ethereum facilities. What sort of utilities and applications are big on Cosmos that people could kind of tinker around with and maybe earn some extra yield on or utilize?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's, you know, some of the equivalents of those things like Aave. So in the Cosmos world, there's the Kujira ecosystem. So that's sort of this cool project that has a lot of cool things you can do where, you know, you'll be able to trade with leverage or like borrow against it to mint the USK stablecoin, all these things like that. But for a sort of low risk yield opportunity, there's Mars Protocol, which does lending similar to Aave and Compound and stuff. And then there's UMI Protocol, which is also very similar. So that's like just from day one, that's like an easy way where like there's yield, you just move your money in, you're earning, you know, a little bit. And I think going beyond that to find better sources of yield, you know, we picture eventually, like imagine this as a product, like a yield aggregator, kind of like Yearn, where it's sort of like you just move your money in and then there's this DAO managing it for you, finding whatever the good yield opportunities are out there. And, you know.
Yeah, like a yield aggregator.
Exactly, yeah. I think, you know, over time we want to push things that way. I think, you know, that's like the best user experience where, you know, there's all these traders and these people that know how to direct the DAO to earn this yield. And that, like in return, they can sort of earn more than they would if they're just investing their own money. But then for some consumer that just like has, you know, they just want to passively earn yields, you know, you just move your money in and the machine does the work for you. But from day one, you know, there's like these lending protocols. But other than that, you'd have to sort of dig and search for, you know, these fun DeFi yield opportunities. And if you can do that, though, you will be rewarded. So
yeah, there's definitely a lot of room for growth. I think that's why a lot of people are invested in this market, because hey, if everything was already built, there'd probably be no money to be made. But the fact that things are still getting built and we are so new, I mean, the opportunity's rife to really, you know, strike it big. But one of the things I did want to ask about, and I know you weren't affiliated with it, so you know you can't speak to the particulars, but I want to know, you know, how can we as a Cosmos ecosystem avoid another Luna catastrophe or something similar? Because that was, you know, a stable coin that was kind of built a little bit on Cosmos. You know, how can we avoid that? What were things that the Cosmos ecosystem learned from that?
Yeah, so that all came down to one main thing, which was just fundamentally algorithmic stable coins like that just aren't a strong design. Like, as opposed to, you know, there's other kinds of stable coins like MakerDAO in Ethereum, which Kujira, like I mentioned, has that same model where that is something that's strong because it's based on being over collateralized, where you have some asset and then that's like held by this network, and then you have the stable coin, but the stable coin is less value than the collateral. And so you're sort of guaranteed for that to be a sound system. Whereas Terra and Luna, like it was trying to be like, oh, what if we just didn't have that much collateral? We had tons of stable coin. Then it turns out, like, you know, if the price goes down a little bit, then everyone gets scared and pulls out and the whole thing blows up. And so that all just came down to the fundamental design. And that's something that's maybe hard for people from the outside to know because, you know, when it was flying high, everyone was like, oh, this is great. Put all your money in this. But, you know, it just takes sort of like doing your own research and like looking into how these things work and sort of thinking about like, is this a sound design or not? I think the community has learned from that lesson a lot, and you know, people aren't really trying these risky things anymore. Everything is very safely collateralized. So, yeah.
Do you think that these like DeFi applications, you know, as the cross-chain future kind of unfolds or the multi-chain future, do you think it will actually add a little bit more resilience to every application? Because now, you know, the smart contract risk or the protocol risk kind of gets diffused across platforms as opposed to just being on one blockchain.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think, yeah, part of that is there's so many choices. People are implementing things many different ways. And so the market can sort of just like look at all of that and see like what actually does make sense, what's sound and what's unsound. And hopefully the market, you know, is watching for all these different things, like the different risks that everyone should be aware of. So,
yeah, I mean, speaking of security, I think one of the questions at the front of everyone's mind is the topic of bridging, which is something that Nomik is definitely familiar with. But when it comes to bridging BTC with Cosmos and all this stuff, it's a little bit different, right? Because I think one of the clear outlooks is that this isn't your average bridge where people, I think there's a cause to be, you know, curious about the security of anything, but this is one of the more secure bridges. I'd love.
Yeah,
to-
we have heard about a lot of bridge hacks. I mean, you know, Wormhole or Nomad, and you know, all these other things that fail and stuff. So it's a valid question for sure.
Definitely, yeah. It's something we think about a lot, and we make security our number one priority. But the nice thing from our position is that there is this past of all these projects where we can learn from their mistakes. And so we have a lot of mechanisms in Nomik where if these other projects had them, I don't think they would have had any issues. For example, there's a circuit breaker. So if all the funds were leaving the bridge at once, the bridge will automatically just sort of put a halt on that where it'll be resumed. But like there's time for the network to sort of assess what's going on. So if there was some hack, instead of just like, in 1 minute, the hacker's like in and then they've got all the funds, you know, there's just a fail safe mechanism where they wouldn't be able to do that. And I like that's just one example. There's many different things where we've looked at all these issues that have happened in the past and made sure that those mistakes can't happen on Nomik. And yeah, I think over time, this is just sort of how technologies develop, where in the beginning, people haven't learned what all the different failure modes are. And then over time, you know, like in the beginning of airplanes and stuff, like it's not like they knew exactly how to do this. And sometimes planes could just like fall out of the sky or something, you know, but like over time, it's just, we see how to build these things. The engineering gets better and everything, you know, will just get lower and lower risk over the years. So, and I think we've already made big steps in Nomik.
We're all standing on the shoulders of giants.
Right, yeah.
Basically, you know, nobody's developing in a vacuum. We're all kind of building on top of what somebody else built and iterating and learning from their failures.
And that's the key, right? Learning, it's the natural process of any industry is learning from other people's mistakes. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the most important thing that we can do as an industry in making things right as we move forward. And Matt, you mentioned it. Like just by adding one thing and two things and seeing what works and then having other projects build on top of that, like over time, these things are going to get more secure. And we saw the same thing as traditional finance was building up and as the internet was building up, like security risks way back when were a whole thing. Like it was a lot easier to get a hold of people's information. It was a lot easier to do a lot of things. But, you know, as the internet has matured, there is better security practices, whether that's VPN or like Malbyte software and all these different things. So I like the analogy.
Yeah. No, I'm excited about what you're building and kind of, I'm curious just, you know, you've been around, you know, like you said, since 2012. So you've seen the bull markets, the bear markets and back again. And, you know, where are we at right now? Again, you know, late October, the halving is coming up in about 6 months. Where do you kind of see this market, you know, trending towards? And again, nothing that we say or you say is going to be financial advice. We just want to get your opinions.
Right. I feel like there's never some sort of like scientific way to know. The best way to really judge these things is really just to feel it and just to be like watching everything and being part of all these communities and just sort of like feel how the sentiment shifts. And it does feel like it's sort of warming up right now and people are sort of ready to be like on the lookout for like the next new cool project that they want to be a part of or that they want to invest in. And, you know, it's always so hard to know and that can always turn at any point, but I am really optimistic. It does feel like everyone out there is sort of like getting more optimistic. And there's also, you know, the macro climate. It feels like interest rates are now at the top. Like economists think, you know, the Fed is going to bring interest rates down. That'll be something that just puts more money flowing back in the economy. And that means crypto going up as well. And yeah, I don't know. It's feeling good.
Yeah, a lot of this is a gut feel. I mean, ask a lot of the asset managers and stuff. You know, you could feel when the market starts to shift. I actually read an excerpt from George Soros that he's like, before I would even logically come to a conclusion about, you know, where the market was going, I would physically like feel it in my gut. He said something like he would get sick the night before something that, you know, the markets start to come down. And I'm like, yeah, he's become one with the market.
I think it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, since it's such a human thing, you know, like a market is really just many humans sort of like trying to figure out what reality is. Like, is this valuable? Is this not valuable? Like, what are other people thinking? Like, everyone's feeling all these feelings and trying to figure out what to do. And, you know, if you're feeling something, there's a good chance that other people are feeling the same way. And so if you're feeling good, then, you know, the market is probably feeling good and ready to invest more. And if you're feeling scared, you know, other people are probably trying to pull out. And yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like if you look at a price chart, it's really, like you said, a graph of human emotion over time. Because if you think about it, prices are just people and people are prices. They're, you know, the only time an asset moves is because some person wants to buy or wants to sell. And sure, maybe it's a bot that a person coded, you know, to buy at this point or sell at this point, but it's still at the end of the day, you know, an expression of some kind of humanity behind it. Crazy. No, I love it. Look, Matt, before we let you go, I just wanted to ask, you know, a quick question. Based on, you know, all the people that you've kind of run into in the Cosmos ecosystem, who else is like, you know, super noteworthy? Who's a good, strong leader that you would kind of recommend people go and, you know, maybe watch them on YouTube? Or, you know, who do you like in the Cosmos ecosystem?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one who comes to mind who already, you know, a lot of people look up to is Sunny Agarwal, who's the founder of Osmosis. And he's just, I think, I really like his opinions on things, and he's well-spoken. He's also sort of a Bitcoin maximalist. Like, I think he has like Bitcoin in his Twitter bio or something. And he's just, you know, I think he's a good one to watch if you're looking for someone in Cosmos.
Love it. And for all those folks who are out there who are listening, and maybe this is the first crypto podcast they've ever even heard, what would you kind of give advice to a young, bright-eyed, eager crypto investor coming from a veteran?
See, I don't know that I'm the best crypto investor in the world. I think I'm just, you know, driven by the technology and stuff. But I think the times where things have paid off the best for me are just when I've followed my curiosity, where there might be some project where it's like, oh, that's a good idea. Like, I want to learn more about that. I think that's the best way, where, you know, don't just take what other people say and like take their opinion, but follow like what you think, like, this might be interesting. And maybe other people, like maybe no one else cares about some project yet, but it's interesting to you. I think that's a really good sign, and that's something to follow. So that would be my advice. Follow your curiosity.
I think that's great advice. What do you think, Brendan?
I mean, Matt, you're messing with all the stuff that we like over here. You're touching Bitcoin, Cosmos, DeFi. I, for one, am excited for you.
Yeah. No.
This cool. Thank you so much. Matt, yeah.
We hope to have you back again sometime soon. We'd love to, you know, keep diving into TurboFish. But until then, we wish you and the community all the best, and we look forward to seeing all of your successes here in the near future. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Bryce. Thank you, Brendan. This was fun. So, thanks.
When
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.